Hello, and welcome to the Science Bloggers Podcast, a show about science communication. My guest this week is McNashie Noel, a molecular geneticist who works in the field of stem cells. McNashie would often hear the misinformation her patients had, and many of her patients either did not understand what their doctors were telling them, or did not know what questions to ask. Instead of doing nothing, McNashie decided to create a science blog, The Scrutinizer, where she could explain the science and provide unbiased, evidence-based information in a way that is simple and easy to understand. So, hello, McNashie. How are you?
Okay, thanks, David, for having me on here on the podcast.
Well, I'm glad to have you. So, why don't we start by you telling our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Hi. So I am a medical geneticist. I have a doctorate in biochemistry, and I worked here at OHSU for 15 years in genetics. Actually, I have worked in almost all parts of the world. And when I was doing the research over at OHSU, most of my work was on stem cells, and then I developed the non-viral gene therapy for Fanconi anemia. I kept hearing about all the misinformation that the patients had, or the people had, or the patients would always say, we don't know what to ask the doctors, or we don't understand what they are saying. And at the other end, at the grocery store and all, there was a lot of, I would say it was confusion, or it still is, about the GMOs, the pesticides, the food, and then all the organic stuff started. So from all that, it felt to me that there has to be someone who can provide reliable, unbiased, science-based information. And that, I thought it was me, and that's how I started the company called The Scrutinizer.
So what kind of questions were people asking?
So, for example, the people go to the grocery store, and in the back of their minds, they are thinking they are doing something good for themselves. They are going to the nature store, the organic store. But at the same time, they are not very sure, should they be spending this much money? Is it really healthy for them? Or the organic milk and so forth? So that's what they were asking. Or I do a lot of gym workout. Actually, this one was the major one that the topic started on my website. Is I do resistance training, and there were all these mostly men, and they are using supplements like creatine, BCAAs, glutamine, and they don't know how to use it. They don't know how much to use it. Are they using too much? And there are in thousands or teenagers, actually, according to statistic, ending up in the ER because they mix and overdose on these kind of supplements. They are not FDA regulated. So I would be giving them advice on that. And then I thought, why am I just talking everywhere, and why not have a place where I can write all this and they can come and read it? The third was the patients that they need help, like a middleman, or especially the oncology patients, and they are scared or they need information right at the moment. So I wanted to write a blog where they can have all the information at one spot. They don't have to go to different websites and books and then make a consensus. And on top of that, they can always email me and I always, or text me and I always answer at the moment.
You know, I guess it must be, you know, very difficult for people today because there's so much information out there and, you know, they don't know who to trust.
Yes.
Especially when you look at something like GMOs, right? This huge fear about
genetically
modifying organisms. You know, where do you think that fear comes from?
It's from not knowing, because they don't know. So they have a word GMO, or they really don't understand. I know this now because I wrote a huge article on GMO. I write in layman's terms. I write in very simple English so that everyone can understand. And I actually started from the Paleolithic era because that is when there was no GMO. When I see people, I tell them, I would be like, you are a GMO too. You know, every time anyone reproduces, it is a GMO. Because other than bacteria, you know, they may clone. So they are not the ones, they get genetically modified. But even our children, they are genetically modified because, you know, they are a hybrid. So I wrote this article, and in that, people had asked me these questions. So I actually had targeted all the people who are against GMOs. So from there, I got really good questions to which I got to answer them. For example, one person had said, you had salmon genes in our corn. So first of all, I said, what would be wrong with it anyways, because if they're adding for the color. But secondly, you are eating salmon. So those genes, if you think the genes can be absorbed just by eating, then you are eating salmon anyways, you are putting genes in yourself anyways. But secondly, genes do not just get integrated by eating. I mean, if that was the case, my gene therapy would have been so easy. I would put genes in a pill, give to the patient, and they're all happy. We would have no genetic diseases then. These are the, whenever I give a talk, and I have shown them how before GMO came, for example, the corn, nobody in this day and age, if they say we have non-GMO corn, they are lying. So this is another of my issue. People can eat or buy anything they want, but I don't want them to sell by lying, because the non-GMO corn in the pictures, it had 3 kernels and it was a very thin, tiny stick. And why did we make the GMOs? Although Neolithic people are the first GMO creators because they started farming. Why did we make GMOs is so that there is enough food for everyone, not so that everyone can get ill. Secondly, all these years people ate the corn. So why now they are saying we got cancer from GMOs? It doesn't make sense. So it is all just a fear of not knowing. And that's what I want to do with my website, to provide a reliable information. And then so that they can use their own critical thinking skills. I do not provide an opinion. I'm not going to say what's good and bad. They are going to use their own thinking skills from the facts I provide and then make their consensus.
When you describe us as being GMOs, genetically modified organisms, it's not something that I actually had thought about before, but, it makes sense because that's how genes work. We are the product of 2 people. Yeah. And, I think that's where the conversation needs to step in, is that people have no idea what genes are.
Yes.
So we take something from salmon and, we put these traits into corn, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people get afraid. It's like, am I going to become like a salmon now?
So, yes.
Do you think this is a problem of science education in general, or is there something more to it?
What I think is, yes, it could be the science education. Secondly, all the science articles that come out, the preliminary studies that come out, for example. Now, the preliminary study, as a scientist, we know it's a prelim study that people have to build up on it until we reach some consensus. But the lay population, when they read these articles, they take it as, oh, this study came out and this is what it means. So this is why there is all this misinformation. Like, for example, vaccinations is the other topic where they would say there is metal is being used, but they don't go to the extent of understanding what that means. And so same with GMOs, they don't go to the extent of understanding how genes work or how they are being done. They are just afraid of it. And secondly, I think it's also a bias against some companies, and they think that, and companies might be doing something wrong. I don't know that. However, if I look at the science, that is sound. So yeah, it is something about them not knowing enough science and then not enough thinking. And it's like following.
I think you raised a lot of, important points there, especially with, this distrust of businesses, right? And I'll admit that there are several problems there, but as you said, the science is sound. So if we have a problem, that shouldn't be it. And I think if we keep focusing on this distrust of the science, we aren't able to focus on the other problems that we have. So like with
yes.
Monsanto, that's the
exactly.
the eternal boogeyman, right? That
yeah,
everyone
yeah.
has.
So, yeah, exactly. This is what I say, that first of all, we need to focus on the right culprit, okay? Just assuming that this is not good doesn't make it bad, or assuming something is good is not going to make it good. Secondly, if we are focused so much on Monsanto or any other company or the big pharma, then the real culprit that we need to keep an eye on, I would say, would be FDA and EPA, okay? Because they are the ones should be controlling things. So we are not focusing on the right people.
It seems as though this is also a problem of science journalism. We write about these preliminary stories.
Yes.
And people, they start panicking. They aren't able to put this into context. What role do you see science communicators in general and science communicators like yourself? What role do you think we have to play in all of this?
If you talk about me or you in this blog that we are collaborating, so we are doing what is right. That, for example, if I write an article, I do a meta-analysis. I am not going to go on one study because science, it can be any of these studies anywhere other than math. They can be massaged in either way. I can run an experiment. I can show it as a good or a bad. However, when you do a meta-analysis, this is statistics now. So it cannot lie. So from there, like I said, the GMO article or the vaccinations, the answer that comes, I write about that. But like you said, the preliminary studies with the open access articles, and then there are other reporters, they are just gonna, anything that comes, they are going to report, but that is a preliminary study and that causes panic. For example, they started with the raw water story came. I mean, it's complicated. It's all about money after that because they were selling in California raw water for so many dollars and they couldn't keep up on shelf. And now you don't need to buy raw water. You can just go to a stream or anywhere in the river, but it's not healthy. They would get sick. If they didn't get sick at the time, this is going to cause disease. So this all goes back to ethics, I would say, that people need to write ethically and not think more about how much money they can make.
I agree. You know, and it's interesting that you bring up the raw water thing, because when that came out, my first thought was like, are people crazy? Why are they buying this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seems like we are in this stage where we no longer acknowledge the role that science and technology has played in our lives. It has become so scary, we think that something that's natural, whatever that means,
yes,
has to be better, that somehow science and technology is removing us from all of this. So I don't want, you know, water that has been treated to remove all that nasty stuff. I want to go to a stream and drink that stuff that might kill me.
Yes, this is a part of what I was very scared that we are, just because some people, it's not everybody, because they are so against science or they got so much into their popularity that we can go back to dark ages with this. Because if there is so much movement against science, how much progress can we even make? And then we will be starting back from that non-GMO corn, which had 3 kernels, and people don't realize that. And I have a cartoon that I always post. It's from a Paleolithic era where these the guys are sitting and speaking and they're saying, we have clean air, we have natural air, natural water, natural everything, but why are we dying at the age of 35? Because, you know, they had scarce food, their lives were hard, so people have forgotten all the comfort they have from science. And secondly, like water, everything natural doesn't mean, I wrote this cartoon for New Year's actually, that everything, that if you get a sore throat or something, please take an antibiotic, do not go to natural mold. After all, mold is what was producing penicillin. And why did we purify it? So that we can know the dosage, we can save lives. And so people have forgotten all that.
Yeah, I guess that's something that people forget. It's that before this modern era that we live in, it was very easy to die. And not just to die, but to die young and in pretty nasty ways. Science and technology has changed that. So is that something your readers and listeners think about?
That is what I am trying to make them think. Because, for example, this recently happened about the animal testing, right? So they don't really know how an animal testing for a product is done, so like if it's done on the mice. I am not agreeing that any of the products should be tested on monkeys or the dogs and so forth. And I am a vegetarian, okay? So, but I had made this choice long ago that, okay, human baby's life is more important than a mouse. Forgive me for saying that. But so people don't understand how the testing is done, and they would come to OHSU or PETA also. They are gonna, you know, ruin the experiments. But I would always tell them, I said, if you can, when your baby is sick, do not give them Tylenol or cough syrup, a simple thing, then yes, go ahead and stop animal tests. Because you don't want to take any of the medication that's tested on what, a plant or a tissue culture. So this is, again, they don't understand what science is about, or that every scientist is not a bad guy. This is about, when they want the medication, they run to the hospital. I don't want them going to the hospital then, if they are so much into against science. So this is what I say to my readers also. And this makes them think. Like you said, I tell them, you are a GMO. So this makes them think and ask questions. So I always say, ask questions. There's never a stupid question. There's never a wrong question. Because if we're not asking questions, then we're not thinking, and apparently we are going backwards. And the goal would be not to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. If we keep reinventing the same thing over and over, we don't progress. You know, we don't invent new things. As far as the people you're communicating to, how have they responded to your message?
Actually, I had success initially. So on Scrutinizer, there are articles on Scrutinizer, and then I posted on Facebook or the social media, and I had angry people. So from there, I saw that there are two kinds of people. One would be just, they just want to cause issues. So they will keep speaking, but there is no science. But I found most of the people, they wanted to actually know what it is, whether pesticides are good for us or bad for us, because or GMOs are good for us. So they asked these questions. Even with one person, it lasted a whole week. But I answered, because he was trying to say, I'm associated with Monsanto. And I said, no, this all is just for science, because I don't want us to go backwards. And they took it well. If you tell them the facts, and quite a few people wanted to know the truth.
What I find so interesting and funny is that most science communicators, when they try to explain this stuff, usually these accusations is like, oh, you're a shill for this company. If you disagree with me, you have to be on their payroll. So that is always interesting. But
yeah, so I always tell them that when people have said this to me, that's why my mission, it's unbiased. So what I tell them is, I am open-minded. You know, we are all on the same side. We all want good health. So bring me the fact. You want me to believe something. It's not about belief. It's about fact, right? So show me the data. I will sit with you and analyze it. And if what you're saying is correct, then it's correct. Then I'm wrong. I admit it. But that never happens, because they're not talking about science. They are just talking from their heads that, this companies are bad, or okay, big pharma, they are doing wrong things, but that's not the point. It's still, we have to hold the FDA and EPA responsible. If they are doing the right thing, there's no way we can have anything wrong happening in our food or medicine.
Yes, we definitely have to hold those organizations, those entities responsible. And, you know, I think on the communication aspect, it's that the loudest people aren't necessarily the people that you're going to convince that they might be wrong. It's those people who are quiet and just reading everything in there that's taking place.
Yeah.
And occasionally they might post something and ask a question. And those are the people that, I guess you can call them fence sitters, who might be convinced that, okay, maybe there's something to the science. Maybe I should listen.
Yeah.
So, Is that something you find in your group?
Yeah, a lot. That's how it started. When I said, I don't know if I'm allowed to take any names, but all these TV personalities, for example, or there is Food Babe, I think they are writing things, or Dr. Axe has published a book. right? He says, eat dirt. Now, when I read his Eating Dirt book, it clearly shows to me he has no idea of microbiology, because he is saying that if we eat dirt, there are bacteria in the soil, and then that will add to our bacteria in the intestine or the stomach, which is completely wrong. There's a reason they are soil bacteria. They grow in soil. We would actually get diseases. And this is a disease called pica anyways, or we will get dysentery and so forth. So all these people are spreading misinformation deliberately for their own fame. And that has caused a lot of issues. So I can only try writing my blog or, you know, talking to people and then giving seminars, but I'm not sure if I can actually compete with them, because I don't know why people don't think by themselves that everything is a chemical. You know, oxygen is a chemical, and even oxygen, if we have too much of it, we can die. If we have less of it, we can die. So the basic message that I send is, in toxicology, the father of toxicology had coined the term that the dose determines the poison. Meaning, if we drink water, gallons of it in 1 hour, our red blood cells are going to burst. We are going to die. Water is necessary. But at the same time, if we overdo it, then we are going to die. So that's the message.
Yeah, and I think that, I guess it comes back down to science education, is that we don't realize everything is a chemical. And, you know, when people think chemicals, you think, oh, it's this harmful stuff that we have to avoid. But that's not always the case. Back to some of the things you said, you know, where you have these celebrities, you know, what mm-hmm. always, you know, strikes me is their reach. They are able to get their message across to so many people. You know, you do you search on Google, and
yes,
they are all within the first page. And unfortunately, as science communicators, we're sort of getting killed out there, you know.
Yes.
So do you think this should, incorporating new knowledge on SEO and how to improve our rankings, is something that science communicators today, is a skill that we need?
Yes, we can do that. Like you said, somehow the wrong information lately, is what people want. And I don't know why, or maybe they are against science. But SEO and so forth, yes, if we can promote our blogs, that would be a good thing, because people who really want to know the information, maybe it would make them think. Maybe they would compare between the celebrities and a real scientist blog. And maybe then scientists won't be the bad guys anymore. Because all of a sudden, medicine is bad, science is bad. But what is natural? I really don't understand what is natural, you know? So natural would be mold is good. So I think that we haven't given them the examples of what natural means. And that's why, like, sodium chloride is salt. They eat salt. But then they're going to say, I need the sea salt. Yes, but there's a reason we purify the salt, because it has other things attached to it. So, yeah, you're right that the scientists need to be, but the right science, you know. Then there are these other science bloggers also, like I said, they write just on the preliminary data, and that causes misinformation also. So we really need to fight against the spread of misinformation and promote the good science information.
Yeah, we definitely do. And, you know, I think it sounds like we also have to hold each other accountable for misinformation we might be spreading.
Yes.
So, is there anything else you'd like to say or to talk about?
No, so the scrutinizer, I only wanted to talk about quickly that so this is the reason the scrutinizer came into picture, that I also write, or people come to me with their product, because my mission is to provide reliable, unbiased, and science-based information, which is backed by facts. So people also bring to me, for example, the makeup, the skincare. And now all those companies, they are trying to promote things by saying, this is going to keep you young, or we added stem cells. I mean, I am a stem cell biologist. So this is really a field that is, it really bothers me, because even the clinics, they are saying, we inject stem cells and pain is gone. For example, they're charging $40,000 per injection. And people believe it because people do not know what stem cells are. But the way the clinic would give their lecture, and it is hope, a patient. So in a way, they are feeding on patients' hope. That bothers me. And stem cells are not some magic entity that you inject somewhere and they know what to do. And so there is a lot of, this is not only just a misinformation, it is feeding on patients' hopes. I was glad that recently there is an article a stem cell biologist has written. They said, clean up the stem cell mess. Because earlier, it's fine, whatever the clinics are doing, we can't stop them. But now they are started to contaminate our good data. Because I met a nurse practitioner recently, and she said she can cure everything below the neck. And then I'm like, so why do we have quadriplegic people, or why haven't we cured ALS or Alzheimer's? And so people need to think, again, critical thinking skills. This is what I teach, that they need to critically think and then act upon it.
Yes, people do need, I mean, we can bring that information to them, but you know, they still need to think about it, so they can know who to listen to and who not to listen to. You know, there's a lot of bad information out there. There are a lot of people taking advantage of them, taking advantage of their hope and fears. Mm-hmm. So yeah. There's a lot of work to do as a science communicator.
So I never say, trust me. I don't. I just say, I'm providing the facts. You look at the facts, use your thinking skills. So maybe slowly they can trust the scrutinizer that I, in fact, am providing reliable information.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a great thing, and I hope it continues to be successful and you reach the people that need to be reached.
Yes. Thanks, David. I'm trying.
You know, I think we can conclude, and you know, thank you for doing this. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David.
That was McNashie Noel. You should check out her blog at thescrutinizer.org if you're interested in reliable and unbiased information in simple and easy to understand articles. I am David Latchman, and this is the Science Bloggers Podcast. If you like this episode, subscribe or leave a comment wherever you heard this episode. You can also follow us on social media, and all links, including the ones to McNashie's site, are in the show notes. Thank you for joining me this week, and I hope you'll be here next week when I talk to a new science communicator.